We'll call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but I think we're going to get started on taking the testimony. I know there was been a couple committee meetings. I was in one of them, taking up some bills that are asking for a great deal of discussion. So people are getting out of those and coming in here, straggling in. So once we have a quorum, we'll pause to approve the minutes. What I'd like to do is go ahead and invite the testifiers to come forward, if I could, please. So, and like we were talking about earlier, members, the importance of the Minnesota nursery and landscape industries and businesses, the importance of those to the state of Minnesota, and also we'll have the Minnesota wineries here, and we want to make it clear that this is agriculture. And I know Representative Hansen is very passionate about this area as all, and Representative Eakin, when we were going around talking with individual members, I know Representative Hansen brought this up as well. And so I just want to raise that to the testifiers here to make sure that you also thank Representative Hansen, which I know we were talking about you did, but I want to get that on record as well. This is an area that he's very passionate about, and so I want to be able to give Representative Hansen some, you know, we're all on first name basis here, right? That's right. We're all friends here. So I want to be able to give him some recognition as well. So to the testifiers, please state your name and who you represent for the record and proceed, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to meet with you today. My name is Bob Fitch. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, the region's oldest and largest horticultural trade organization, founded in 1925. With me is Mr. Tim Power, who is one of our past presidents. He also is, until very recently, a longtime nursery operator himself, and he's joined our government affairs team here recently. He's here to save me if you guys get into technical questions that I can't answer on nursery production.
So welcome.
Approximately 1,500 companies are members of MNLA, making it one of the five largest state green industry trade organizations in the country. The vast majority of our members are small, family-owned companies that have 10 or fewer full-time employees. As the nation's most broadly based green industry trade organization, we are a little bit of everything. We have retail in our garden centers. We have construction in our landscape design and installation companies, and we have service companies in our lawn, garden, and tree care companies. But a major point that I would like to drive home today is just what Chairman Hamilton has said, and that is that horticulture is agriculture. We may not fit the traditional perception of what many consider agriculture. My dad happens to run a corn and soybean farm in South Dakota and is in the cattle business. And once upon a time, I worked for the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. So I do fully appreciate the economic importance of traditional agriculture to the state's economy. But I want you leaving here today understanding that the production, the wholesale production of trees, shrubs, perennials, and annuals is agriculture as long defined by both the state and the federal government. In your handout today, inside the four color piece, there's a sheet, and on the back of that sheet is a list of citations from both the state and the federal government specifying the different ways that we are defined as agriculture. As you can, and then on the color glossy piece itself, our economic impact document you received, on the page 2 of that, you'll see the production, the agricultural production of nurseries and greenhouses in the state amounts to nearly $350 million a year. While most of the nurseries and greenhouses in the state fit our small business prototype, it is worth noting that Minnesota is home to Bailey Nurseries, one of the nation's largest wholesale nursery growers. Bailey's has operations in 5 states, but is very proud to call the small town of Newport their home. When you add in the sales of our landscape and garden center sectors, you'll see that collectively, nursery and landscape companies in Minnesota generate approximately $2.1 billion in annual sales. This does not count the nursery sales at the big box stores, nor does it count the sales of the big national lawn care companies. That's $2.1 billion in annual sales from local family-owned companies. Where do we fit in as far as this committee is concerned? First, I want to make note of the fact that we have a vested interest in the noxious weeds program and the terrestrial invasive species program at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. MNLA is active on the MDA Noxious Weeds Advisory Committee, the Minnesota Invasive Species Advisory Council. Nursery and landscape professionals keep up to date on what plants may potentially threaten native habitats and take an active role on the state's Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, which utilizes science-based information and science-based evaluation process. Over the years, MNLA has worked to educate our members and consumers about alternatives to invasive landscape plants, as well as management strategies for plants that have some aggressive tendencies. Likewise, invasive insect species and invasive plant diseases are a serious concern for our industry. Obviously, it hurts our economic livelihood in the state if the region is hit with an insect or disease that hurts the saleability or survivability of nursery stock. For example, just 10 or 20 years ago, ash trees typically made up about 20% to 30% of the inventories of the wholesale nurseries in the state. From the time emerald ash borer, or EAB, was discovered in Michigan, EAB being an insect pest that destroys ash trees, from the time that was first discovered in Michigan until it was discovered in Minnesota in 2009, the value of the tree inventory of our nursery growers decreased to the point that it was virtually worthless by the time the movement of ash stock became restricted two years ago, in Hennepin, Ramsey, and Houston counties. There was absolutely no federal or state reimbursement program for this lost plant inventory, and there was no crop insurance policy that covered it. Because of the number of years it takes to grow a saleable 2 to 2.5 inch caliper shade tree, our growers ended up swallowing millions of dollars in losses from this pest, a pest that no one had even heard of a mere 10 years ago. Pests such as these are a threat to both our community trees and our natural forests, phenomenally important and underappreciated environmental assets. On the insert in your packet there on the front of that, it's got a list of all the many environmental benefits of trees, and I'll let you read that at your leisure. But because of the importance and the severity of the impacts of these invasive species, we want to encourage the Agriculture Committee to continue to provide the $400,000 in state general fund monies to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to obtain 2 to 3 times that much each year from the federal government to help slow the spread of pests such as gypsy moth and emerald ash borer. In addition, MDA's active participation in the Gypsy Moth Slow the Spread program ensures that the federal government pays 100% of pheromone flake treatment on about 130,000 acres of trees in the state. That is about another $2 million benefit to the state's environment that somebody else is picking up the tab for, so long as we keep that $400,000 commitment going on the front end to leverage those federal dollars. Furthermore, failing to participate, failing to maintain the state's participation in the Gypsy Moth Slow the Spread program would inevitably result in a rapid move towards a federal quarantine of the state, which would seriously impact the nursery industry and the cost of operations for our nurseries. If the state fails to allocate appropriately or breaks the close ties that MDA has with USDA APHIS and the U.S. Forest Service, this will result in a loss of those federal funds, allowing these pests to enter the state more quickly. Once these pests are established, then the federal government takes its prevention dollars and goes home. That leaves the rapidly escalating costs of treatment or tree removal to be borne by the state government and quickly passed on to local governments and citizens in what amounts to an unfunded mandate. We urge you not to be penny wise and pound foolish on the subject of invasive species.
Excuse me, Mr. Fitch, sure. A question surrounding that. We talk a lot about, on the agriculture side of things, you know, the threat of emerging diseases. I know that we had the Commissioner of Agriculture in here talking about upholding the integrity of the food supply, upholding the integrity of agriculture in general, you know, when it comes to the threats of emerging diseases. My question to you specifically is, I understand in the role that I play in my private sector job, and you brought up your impact or your influence and involvement with the pork producers. I understand what pseudorabies does to hogs, what bovine TB does to cattle. And it's interesting, you're helping us understand better here today about the what ended up happening, the impact that whether it's some of the insects or emerging diseases that have on your industry as well. What percentage or what would happen, first of all, my question is, what percentage of your business is exported out of the state that you know of? Do we do a lot of exports to other states?
I believe it's on the back of that four-color piece. It's got the export amounts. I think it's about $90 million. In exports of nursery and greenhouse products out of the state. We are a net importer of agricultural products.
Okay.
But because of the size of Bailey Nurseries, we do have significant exports. We do have other growers who export as well, but Bailey's being by far the largest.
Okay.
But we import a lot of nursery stock from both the eastern Corn Belt areas of Illinois, Ohio areas, as well as a lot of stock out of Oregon, which is one of the nation's largest nursery-producing states.
Okay, and Mr. Fitch, that's excuse me, that's my point. That's substantial, the amount of dollars that are brought into the state for exports or due to exports. And in the event something like this impacts the nurseries, then that would, in essence, close off those exports for you.
It would either close off the exports, or more likely what it would do would, in the case of gypsy moth specifically, it would increase the ongoing expenses that the company such as Bailey's would have, where in Bailey's case, they'd have to spend literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for either extra inspections or extra treatments of the trees, of their shade trees, before or any plants with soil that are planted in the soil before they could export those products. And as we go forward, certainly, you know, in the case of Emerald Ash Borer, that market is shut down.
Yes.
I mean, there are guys in the state who maybe are hoping for a miracle and are sitting on a few ash trees out there, but the vast majority, anybody here in the Twin Cities metro area is no longer selling ash trees because it's against the law in Hennepin, Ramsey, and down in southeast part of the state in Houston County.
Okay. And Mr. Fitch, we do have a couple other questions. Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fitch, you talked about the stock that's imported into Minnesota to be grown in the nurseries. My question is, who's responsible for inspecting that stock to make sure that there is no invasive species or you know, unknown disease coming in with that stock?
And Mr. Fitch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schmansky, that was exactly the next portion of my presentation.
So you're getting ahead of yourself, Representative Schmansky.
Our industry has worked hard to keep our own house in order.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fitch. Yeah. Before you go on, we have another question from Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reference to the back of that colored brochure, you mentioned $96 million going to other states in nursery and landscape exports, but then you show on the map itself $1.7 billion for the Twin Cities. Is that their money that they have earned?
That's gross, Mr. Chairman, Representative. That's the annual sales of nursery and landscape companies, all nursery and landscape companies based in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. That's what that $1.7 billion. That includes the landscape sales, which when you get a chance to go through that, you'll see that the landscape sales are substantially larger. It's about $1.1 billion of our total annual sales in the state is landscape installation or services related.
So Representative Anderson, follow up.
Does that mean then the 1.7, the 96 million is included in those figures that are on the map?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Another question from Representative Paul Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Mr. Fitch, you mentioned the demise of ash trees in our state, and we had a lot of, or have a lot of ash trees in Minnesota. What type of trees are going to take the place of ash trees as they slowly disappear and vanish from Minnesota?
Mr. Fitch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I'm going to let my colleague here answer that question as a 30-year nursery operator and guy who's grown shade trees for the last 30 years. He can answer that better than I can.
Mr. Powers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson. Hopefully what will replace the ash trees is a wide variety of different species of trees. Unfortunately, in the last go-around, when Dutch elm disease hit, we planted far too many ash trees in their place. And at the moment, my personal opinion is that we're planting too many maple trees, particularly autumn blaze maple trees, in replacement for not only elms, but ash and other failing species. I think that we will have our best success if we use a wide variety with the expertise of members of our association as landscape designers and architects to provide those plans. There are lots and lots of things relating to which trees to plant, involving soil types and site conditions. My hope is that we are able to plant a wide variety of species.
Representative Anderson, follow up. Representative Eakin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to welcome a group that's visiting today from the Red River Valley. You notice the blue shirts in the audience, and they are the emerging leaders of the Red River Valley. I thought I'd mention that there's a number of members, both serving and former members, who went through this program of the emerging leaders in the legislature. So you may be looking at potential competition here. I just thought I'd let you know that. So, that's true. I guess it's me. Representative Keel, too, I think. So thank you.
Well, welcome. Thank you. So we're sizing up the competition right now, all right? Future competition. So, thank you, Representative Eakin. Mr. Fitch,
back
please
to,
proceed.
Mr. Chairman, back to Representative Szymanski's question. Our industry has worked hard to keep our own house in order on these issues. Protecting the value of our inventories and providing pest-free nursery stock to consumers is a big reason we advocate for a strong nursery inspection program. The nursery inspection program, which governs interstate and intrastate movement of nursery stock as dictated by the U.S. Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, USDA APHIS, has been housed at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture Plant Protection Division for almost a century. I would like to highlight the fact that nursery inspections and the certification of nursery stock are paid for by user fees. About a decade ago, in one of those few years when the state didn't have a projected budget deficit, MNLA, in concert with the Plant Protection Division, advocated for a move to a dedicated account for nursery inspection fees. So in the good times, we worked with MDA to voluntarily increase our fees and have been paying the state an administrative overhead fee all that time so that our nursery inspection program would not be hampered in times of economic distress. We expect good faith on the part of the administration and the legislature to not tap our small amount of reserves and that we have in our dedicated account and take those monies for some other purpose. Minnesota's growers of horticultural crops and their brethren on the landscape side of the industry are proud to be part of the state's agricultural heritage, and we look forward to continuing to work closely with this committee and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. In the interest of time, I would just mention as a quick side note, we also have a great working relationship with MDA's pesticide and fertilizer division. Many in our industry have their pesticide applicator license, which goes through that division. We also have a long working relationship with the marketing division at MDA. We are active, longtime members of the Minnesota Grown program. I'm a past president of the Minnesota Grown Promotion Group. They just do an absolutely phenomenal job helping the state, especially crop sectors, and I think you're going to hear more about that later. So in conclusion, I want to reemphasize again that nursery and greenhouse plant production, i.e. horticulture, is agriculture. And MNLA encourages your ongoing support for MDA's terrestrial invasive species program, the noxious weeds program, and the nursery inspection program. From every corner of the state and every legislative district, the 28,000 people who rely on the state's family-owned nursery and landscape companies for employment welcome your interest and support for the important role that we play in Minnesota's agriculture and the enhancement of Minnesota's environment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Fitch. Could you tell me once again on the $400,000 that the state fund, that the state invests, what type of federal match comes along with that?
It varies every year, Mr. Chairman, but it's approximately $1 to $1.2 million that MDA receives. Most of those monies of that $400,000 and the $1.2 million go towards the Gypsy Moth Slow the Spread program. At this point, most of the dollars that have come into the state from the federal government related to EAB, most of the dollars that have been spent in the state have so far been federal dollars, both through MDA and DNR.
Okay. Thank you. So, any other questions for the testifiers, members? So, well, I just want to reiterate our position, my position at least, that you definitely are agriculture, and that was the conversation that we had prior to the committee hearing. And for the members that came in, this is one of the areas that Representative Hansen also was very concerned with and wanted to make sure that we had a public hearing on this also. I want to thank you for your time coming here today and providing us with information. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback for us as we continue to move forward, I just want to get it on record that we eagerly and openly will take any advice that you have to offer us here. We're faced with some difficult times. There's no question about it. So we have hold on here. So, with that, members, I just want to thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. We look forward to working with you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are they here? Okay. All right, members. We do have members from Minnesota Grown here. Is that correct? As you're making your way up here, we do have a quorum. Could we have somebody approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I approve the minutes.
Who's that?
Chris.
Wow, he's awake over there. So, Representative Swazinski moves the approval of the minutes dated February 15th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So, welcome to our committee. We're going to be discussing Minnesota Grown. And if you would state your name for the record and who you represent, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greta Gothier, and I am Government Relations Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for having us in to talk today about Minnesota Grown, very popular program. And I, with me here today, Paul Huguenin, who is the Project Director for Minnesota Grown.
Welcome.
So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Paul, and he has a PowerPoint to share with us, and then we also have given you our Minnesota Grown directory. And just so you know, if you check page 79, you will find Representative Szymanski's orchard.
So,
bottom right-hand corner.
Yeah. Representative Szymanski, you're famous.
Famous so. Today.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's entry number 748. And I have autographed a couple of books already.
Thank you, Representative Szymanski.
I thought it was going to be a full-page ad here.
So, Representative Anderson, go through the chair, please. I am totally losing all type of control over this committee, am I not? So, please proceed, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Huguenin. I coordinate the local foods area at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, which includes the Minnesota Grown Program. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and give you a short overview of what our program is and what we do. Just in terms of a really, really quick background, the first state appropriation for the Minnesota Grown Program goes all the way back to fiscal year 1988. The statutory reference for our program can be found in 17-102, and there's a section of rules that govern the logo in Chapter 1556. One of the things that is really key about our program is the fact that it truly is a public-private partnership. The law that created our program requires that we bring in at least $1 of private funding for every $4 of our appropriation. We actually bring in more than twice that amount. So the $186,000 appropriation from last fiscal year was met with more than $102,000 of private investment into our programs. Now that comes in the form of license fees, it comes in the form of advertising revenue, and various cost share programs. I'm pleased to say that membership in our program from farmers is growing, and growing steadily. In fact, we increased more than 10% last year. We now have more than 1,100 farmer members across the state of Minnesota. That license fee, that membership fee, is $20 per year. We often get asked, so what qualifies as Minnesota Grown? What does that mean? The key for us is that Minnesota Grown means, as you would expect, that it comes from a farm in Minnesota. Could be livestock, could be plants, nursery stock absolutely is part of Minnesota Grown. And so our statute says 80% of the product that says Minnesota Grown had to come from farms in Minnesota. Something that's really important that I want to emphasize is that under our banner of Minnesota Grown, we are not specific to size of farms, we're not specific to production practices. We have farms that literally are just big enough to have enough extra to sell at a farmer's market. We also work with Golden Plum Poultry. We have producers that are conventional, we have producers that are organic, and we have literally every permutation in between. So for us, that key message is to support Minnesota agriculture and to work with Minnesota farmers. So that's one of the key points of our program. We have a spokesperson that we're very, very proud of. Her name is Carrie Tollefson. She grew up running in farm country out near Dawson, Minnesota. She still holds more individual high school championships than any person, male or female, in Minnesota history. She's a track and field runner, 5 national championships, ran in the 2004 Olympics in Athens, lives in St. Paul, and is training for the 2012 Olympics. The partnership with Carrie makes sense for us on a lot of levels, but partially because as an Olympic athlete, she's in a unique position to talk about the importance of what we eat, how it affects our performance, be that in school, be that in our work, be that as an athlete. She has a wonderful connection to kids. She now has her own child, so she's in a unique position to talk about the benefits of eating locally and choosing local products. The book that you have from us is our 2010 Minnesota Grown Directory, which has also grown steadily. The book in front of you has 840 listings. After we went to press, we went up, we've got 860 listings online, and we've continued to grow from there. We took delivery of 190,000 copies of that book about May 1st of last year. We literally opened the last box of 50 to pass out samples here. So 190,000 copies in 9 to 10 months. Tremendous consumer demand for that publication. Early on, I mentioned the importance of a public-private partnership, that there's private investment in this program. Farmers pay $40 for a listing in that book. We think it's a tremendous value, but it's important nonetheless that our members are contributing to cover some of the costs of what we do. We also sell, you'll see in the middle of that, we sell display ads, and we have sponsors, including both Minnesota Farmers Union, Minnesota Farm Bureau, people like the Extension Service and others who see the value in reaching out and marketing to an audience that is interested in local foods. The printed book that you have is completely online at minnesotagrown.com. We had more than 223,000 unique visitors to that website this past year in 2010, a 48% increase from 2009. So 190,000 printed copies, 223,000 unique visitors to the online website. There's definitely consumer interest in buying locally, and that includes local plants. My good colleague Bob Fitch talked about nurseries and garden centers. They are absolutely an important part of this, and you'll find a number of those folks listed in the directory. We also have members who market not directly to the consumer, but to wholesale markets, restaurants, grocery stores, local schools who are buying locally. And so what we do to support those folks are a couple of things. We sponsor retail merchandising contests with grocery store chains. Cub Foods, Lunds and Byerly's, Coburn's and Cashwise all did retail merchandising contests with their stores during the past year. A challenge for our members is when you have a seasonal product and you're in a grocery store, how do you stand out? How do you catch the consumer's eye if you're only there for a month or 2 months? So we do cost sharing with individual members so that they can sample their product in grocery stores, co-ops. We work with wineries so that they could sample in liquor stores, etc. And the newest part of what we do for folks who are marketing to wholesale markets is we now have an online database that will launch within the next 3 to 4 weeks of our farmer members who sell to wholesale markets. We've had a lot of interest from schools who say, we want to buy locally, but we don't know farmers in our area who could supply us with apples or with carrots or potatoes. So this, for people who are members of Minnesota Grown at the $20 level, that's a free directory for them to be in. There's not going to be a printed version, which is why we can do that. But we're excited about it, and that will launch in the next 3 to 4 weeks. I mentioned the contest. This picture is actually from McIntoon's in Waconia. They were H. Brooks & Company is a wholesaler, and they had a contest to see who would do the best display of Minnesota products. They're using some of our point-of-sale materials and some that they created as well. An example of an independent grocer that does a phenomenal job of promoting local products. We encourage our members to add that logo right to their package. Kowalski Supermarkets does private label for certain products. The one of the labels you see is a honey product where they're sourcing it from Minnesota honey producers, and so they've got the Minnesota Grown logo right on that label. Another example of a company in Owatonna, which speaks to the size of some of our members, Bushel Boy Tomatoes in Owatonna put the Minnesota Grown logo on the clamshell. Now, just that one company putting it on that one product is 1 million consumer impressions a year. 1 million labels going out like that at their expense. So, private investment, private partnership.
Excuse me, if I could interrupt you here shortly, just to recognize we do have the 12th grade students from Princeton High School. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People. So I just want to say welcome, everybody, to the Ag Committee. So thanks. And you're going to come up and testify next, so be ready, all right? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We also distribute marketing materials to our members, stickers, price cards, posters, twist ties. In fact, we distributed 1.4 million items to our members and also to retail stores during this past year. So we make it easy for members to identify their products as Minnesota Grown, and we want to make it easy for retailers to be able to do the same thing. Just a quick note on a couple of really high growth areas. I mentioned that the numbers in the directory are growing. So where are we seeing that growth? Communities are eager to find a way to bring people downtown, to recreate a sense of community in small towns. And a farmer's market is often viewed as a way to do that. There's 128 farmer's markets in the Minnesota Grown directory that you have. 3 years ago, there would have been 88, I believe, was the total. Community-supported agriculture has caught the attention of many in Minnesota. There's more than 70 CSA farms on our website. 5 years ago, you'd have been lucky to find 24. The farm winery industry has grown dramatically. There's more than 30 licensed farm wineries in Minnesota. 10 years ago, you'd have probably been at a half a dozen, maybe a dozen at most. And that creates opportunities for farmers as well as for wineries and agritourism. Of course.
Excuse me, we do have a question to this. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
to the testifier.
It's not in the book. Oh, Mr. Unigan, thank you. Sorry. I just have to say that I absolutely love farmers markets. I used to, before campaigning last summer, I was able to go down to Minneapolis. Nothing better to do is take kids down from Alexandria and travel down to Minneapolis. Actually, it was the St. Paul Farmers Market, just so that we could, you know, experience that. I see that Todd County isn't in here, How would one of us, how would we encourage our counties to get involved in start their own farmers markets?
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are in the middle of putting together our next year's directory, and so the time is ripe to suggest that folks participate and join us. We often go out, we make appearances. We're happy to go to any farm meeting, any group of individuals that's curious. We actually have some staff that can help organize farmers markets and share things like sample bylaws from some of the established markets and can help. There's printed materials that let farmers market vendors know what do they need to do to stay in compliance with food safety laws. So we can help. It just takes some interested folks like yourself who want to put some individuals together, and we'll be more than happy to work with you to do that.
Representative Franzen, follow-up? All right. See you again.
Another growth area, of course, is organics. And one of the things that the legislature encouraged us to do when we were created was to develop specific versions of our logo to meet specific marketing needs. So we developed a Minnesota-grown organic logo that's only available for use by certified organic farms. So a good example of capitalizing on the statewide recognition of Minnesota Grown and being able to use that to meet a specific marketing need. And, of course, farm-to-school is something that many districts are interested in, and our database will be a big asset for those folks. We're partnering with a number of organizations ranging from the Department of Health, Department of Education, and the University of Minnesota to do that. What I would like to do at this point is, I mentioned how much traffic that we get to our website, and this is at minnesotagrown.com, and I just wanted to show you how easy it is for people to find things close to them. So you could enter a zip code, you could enter a city. In this case, I'll randomly say, let's see what we have in Silver Lake, and what it's going to do is it'll sort all 860 listings based on how close they are to Silver Lake. Well, Silver Lake happens to be where one of the committee members and one of our members is from, and that is Representative Szymanski's farm in Silver Lake. But it'll come up with a list based on how close you are to what you entered. And so then you can get details about any individual listing. Now, one of the things that Representative Szymanski hasn't done that I'd like him to do is send us some pictures. On the left side where the Minnesota Grown logo is, we could put a picture of the farm, of happy customers. It could be a farm logo. We also have the ability to put announcements there. But so that all of you next fall can take a trip and buy fresh apples from the producer, you can enter your address in our Google Maps system, and you can get directions from your house or from the Capitol right to Representative Szymanski's farm. The only other thing that I was going to show you is what that looks like when people take advantage of the ability to send in pictures, because the listings come alive. So they can send in pictures, they can send in logos. When clicked, they become big. You can also send in announcements to say, hey, Highway 14 is closed. Here's an alternate route to the farm. We open next Tuesday. We're going to open late because of the weather. You name it. So that gives you a really quick kind of an idea of what we do with our online directory. We've become active in things like social media, like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, putting videos and things like that up. Tremendous growth. We want to become more interactive with our consumers. The last piece I wanted to show you is one of our ads. We do ads. We cooperate with our partners. This first one happens to be an ad for the Minneapolis Farmers Market. And the reason I showed that particular ad is because it's an example of how we cost share. So this is a part of a $25,000 television advertising package, of which the department put in about $8,500. So the Minneapolis Farmers Market and St. Paul Farmers Market put in the balance. This will feature our spokesperson, Carrie Tollefson, and some customers talking about why they shop there.
At the Minneapolis Farmers Market, you'll find the freshest, locally grown food. Just look for the label.
The flavor and taste and variety offered is really great.
These herbs are fantastic.
The girls like to get the honey sticks.
Everyone at the market's really friendly.
The Minnesota tomatoes, they're sweet and ripe, and they're so fresh when they're locally grown.
It's gotta say, Minnesota Grown.
There's only one label to look for when you want it fresh. Minnesota Grown at the Minneapolis Farmers Market.
It's good!
I wanted to give you, to, for a sense of diversity, there's one final 30-second ad, and this is featuring apple orchards and pumpkin patches. Again, features our spokesperson, Carrie Tollefson. The other person in with Carrie is Jeff Grayson. Jeff used to be a sports anchor on Fox 9, for those of you who may remember him there. This one's a little sillier, but when you don't have a big budget, you need to do something to be memorable. One of the fun things to do here is to watch Jeff as he proceeds through the orchard and visualize how much he must have eaten in the 3 hours it took us to film this.
What is an Olympic athlete like Carrie Tollefson doing out on the farm?
Apples are great for my health, Jeff. Nothing beats the flavor of Minnesota-grown apples, and it's tons of fun. Come on.
There it is.
Find the world's greatest apples and fun at MinnesotaGrown.com.
With that, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. We look forward to answering any questions that you might have about our program.
So we do have some questions. Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you briefly describe to me the process for being certified as an organic grower?
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are a number of certification agencies that are authorized to certify farms in the state of Minnesota. There's a list of those folks on the Department of Ag's website. And so the farmer can choose from a number of organizations that certify to the federal standards and that the Department of Agriculture has said, yes, you can do that work in Minnesota. So there are options. I am not an expert in the organic certification, so I couldn't tell you what the range of costs are on that. But there are choices for farmers in terms of what organization they choose to be certified by.
Representative McElfatrick, follow-up?
No, thank you.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Huguenin. It's a great program, and I wanted to talk just a minute about the farm-to-school program, which I think has a lot of potential. I see that's a high-growth area, which is great, and especially considering the importance of setting good nutrition habits early on in our children's lives. I was wondering how widespread it is right now, how many schools participate in a farm-to-school program here, I guess how fast it's growing. And also, if there's any involvement with the statewide health improvement program, the SHIP program, if you intersect with their program at all, it seems to me that there'd be a natural coordination that could occur there.
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eakin. I don't know the number of schools off the top of my head. There is a survey that was done by IATP this last year that quantifies the number of districts with active farm-to-school programs. I don't know the number, the percent. I know that it's grown tremendously, and it's a significant number. In terms of coordination with SHIP and other programs, yes, we absolutely do that. We've been fortunate to cooperate with the Minnesota Department of Health, and they bring all of the state agencies who have some role in farm-to-school. They've brought us all together from time to time so that we can talk about, okay, what's going on with SHIP? What's going on with the University of Minnesota Extension? So that we're aware of the players, we can collaborate, we can avoid overlap, and that we can get some progress and get things done. I can tell you that one of the things we've done with Carrie Tollefson is we've made a poster for local school districts that talk about the district buying local, and it shows her with some school children and some food service folks. We also took Carrie out to meet with all of the third and sixth grade classes at Wadena this past fall, and it was wonderful to watch Carrie interact with those kids because she stood at the front, she had them doing exercises at their desk, she had them talking about what they like to eat, and it was one quick anecdote is that one of the children said, I have to tell you, Carrie, I don't like peppers, but when my mom puts them in omelets, they're pretty good. And Carrie immediately jumped on that, and she said, you know what, that's great. She said, I have to be honest. I'm not a big fan of apples, but I love applesauce. It's okay to not like everything as long as you try it, but then keep looking for ways that you can get those fresh local products in. And so Carrie's a wonderful person, and one of our goals is to get Carrie in front of more kids more often. We're partnering with the University of Minnesota Extension Office to do that, and so I'm hopeful this fall we'll have a lot more fun to do with that.
Representative Eakin. Representative Szymanski.
Well, th- Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Huguenin, you just dovetailed into my next question. Thank you. I was just looking through the book a little further, just to, you know, a little more hometown flavor. Page 52 has the Minnesota Garlic Festival ad on there, but it also has Minnesota pork on there as well, Mr. Chairman. So, but my question or my comment to you, you'd mentioned about partnering with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. And I had approached the Extension Service a year and a half ago, about providing recipes or formulas for home canning, those types of things. And I was wondering if through Minnesota Grown we could have a link on the website, you know, to the University Extension, or even to some of the producers' websites that may carry recipes and things like that. Representative Eakin also mentioned the SHIP program, and I did receive a survey from our county health nurse program, you know, with the product availability, you know, to the local schools and hospitals and so forth. So they are surveying us, and so we are getting that participation involved. The third thing I'd like to mention deals with the emergency food shelves and the participation that the local growers have with the food shelves, and I think that's grown tremendously in the last few years. So, Mr. Huguenin, if you'd like to comment any further on those items, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski, to start with the part about the University of Minnesota Extension and canning and so forth, we absolutely look for ways to publicize those events, and we do that. We have a consumer newsletter that goes out monthly to about 8,000 Minnesotans who've signed up to get kind of what's going on, what's new, what's local. We also want to do more with our website in terms of consumer events. So we do very much want to do that. I've talked to some folks over there and asked them to be sure that when they schedule events like that to tell us, because we'd love to help promote them. Because the more we can get consumers to do things like canning and freezing, the more they're going to buy every time they visit an orchard, a berry farm, a farmer's market. You name it. The emergency food shelves, absolutely. The department had done some investigative reporting last year on that. We're looking for ways to help link our producers like yourself. I know that you've partnered with your local food shelves often. So we're looking for ways that we can help facilitate that connection so that when a farmer says, I've got something that I'm not going to be able to harvest or that's extra, that product can go to good use in helping to feed hungry Minnesotans. And I apologize, I may have missed one of your...
The SHIP program is the other thing I mentioned.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Huguenin, the SHIP program.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski. We do work with them, and the SHIP program has been able to fund some of the fresh fruit and vegetable programs in classrooms so that kids are not just being encouraged to eat healthy foods at lunchtime, but they may have an afternoon snack or a break. So when we went to Wadena with Carrie, we dovetailed with the nutrition person who came to the classroom, and we let her introduce Carrie so that those kids could connect those two and kind of get the credibility of Carrie going along with the nutritionist who was there to help kids eat healthy snacks in the classroom. So we're eager to partner. We're eager to work to do those kinds of things as much as we can.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Huguenin, with the rapid advance of social media, internet, things like that, I'm curious to know what you feel is your best method of outreach in trying to reach the audience you're going after. Is it the good old hard copy catalog? Is it the online version or TV ads? What do you find is most effective in trying to reach your audience?
Mr. Huguenin.
Mr. Chair and Representative, It's a question that we wrestle with often. We have an advisory committee, and Bob Fitch mentioned that he chaired that for a number of years for us. And those are questions we wrestle with there. And I'll tell you an anecdote that about 10 years ago, we thought that as people use the online edition more and more, we'd be able to reduce the number of printed copies that we make. Not true. Both have grown and grown simultaneously. The best way that I can answer that is to say that it really requires all of those methods. There are a number of people who, yeah, they can find it online, yeah, they could do all that, but they really want that tangible thing in their hands. That's what they want to use. We have folks that keep it in the glove box of their car so that when they drive to Duluth, they can look and see, hey, where can I stop on the way? I've got an extra couple of hours. What's nearby? The website obviously is great for us because it's a very efficient way to reach a lot of people, but not everybody likes to do business and get information that way. The social networking and social media is our most rapidly growing outreach tool. We launched our Facebook page for Minnesota Grown in mid-November, and we're up to 700 people that have liked us. And this is by far the slowest time of year in terms of local foods. We're very optimistic that when we get into May and markets start to open and people start to go to garden centers, we think we're going to be able to do some really amazing things with that. So the short answer is we need to do all those things because people have different ways that they want to connect with us, and we need to meet them where the consumer is.
Representative Anderson? A question that I have here, I believe it was 2005, 2006, so we did increase the fees to become a member,
yes.
To be associated with this, the annual fee increase. Is that, have you received any feedback? Is that adequate? Should it be raised, lowered? Any feedback on that?
Mr. Chair, when we actually, one of the things of note is that that fee increase was asked for by the members, and our advisory committee said we need to raise fees because if we're going to go ask the legislature for money, we need to be able to demonstrate that our member producers are willing to do the same. And so that was the background on that. We did not get negative feedback from our members. I mean, we feel strongly that we provide value for them, and that was their response. That year we went from 948 licensees all the way down to 944. So we lost four people that year, and then the next year we were back up well over 1,000. So I feel good about where that fee is. Down the road at some point, yeah, I would suspect our members would be willing to say, let's talk about that.
Okay, thank you. I think I know that I recognize the importance of this, but I don't think we fully recognize how big the opportunities are in these local grown, Minnesota grown markets. For instance, members, I had a family in my office yesterday talking about and how they came back home. He was living in the cities, a young family. He moved back home out in a rural area and started growing vegetables, selling to local markets. And he said he started very, very small, still very small, under 10 acres of vegetables. But he says the opportunity I could easily, if I had the labor and you know, the wherewithal, if you will, he said I could easily grow that market. So the opportunities are huge. And you talk about the involvement. We had a meeting yesterday about ag literacy, and this whole Representative Eakin brought up the farm to school program as well. This is another great opportunity to get individuals connected back to agriculture, who we are and what we do. You heard from the testifiers here earlier about the importance of nursery, landscaping, et cetera, et cetera. All these opportunities are huge when it comes to educating the people, the children, if you will, the next generation, on the importance of all this and the importance of it done locally. And back to the family I was talking about, he said, Representative Hamilton, I think I saved the family farm by doing this, by diversifying, by focusing on this. He said, even though it's small, we are able to make enough money, if you will, to live off that ground. And so, again, I don't know if we fully recognize the opportunities that we have here when you're talking about some of these niche markets, but then the opportunity just to grow this and reverse the trend of farmers getting older and older and individuals moving off the rural area. This is a way, if we put our minds to it and focus on this, this is a way to reverse that trend and a great opportunity for people to make substantial dollars or a good living off of a few acres of land, if you will. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Do we have any questions or comments for the testifiers? So,
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say that I think we would agree wholeheartedly with what you just said, that this is a growing market and a great way for young farmers to get started. And we're ready to help those people any way we can at the department.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. So, again, thank you for your testimony. We know where to find you, right?
Yes.
We know where to find you if we need any additional information. Representative Szymanski, you do have an order from them as well about getting pictures to them. You know, your competition, my friend, is out ahead of you. They're out ahead of you. Yeah. So I'm just teasing. Thank you. Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would just agree totally with what you said, Mr. Chairman. Agriculture is really changing. We are seeing land prices in the areas of $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 an acre. It's virtually impossible for somebody to come back home and expect to start farming the traditional way of buying land and crop farming. So you're exactly right. This is an avenue for folks to come back home. Livestock is another area that possibly would work, but we need to promote this to keep young people coming back home and staying in our rural areas. So I agree totally.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. So, members, the reps for the Minnesota wineries and Minnesota grape growers could not make it, so they had a late cancellation here. So with that, I just want to remind the committee that there will not be a committee hearing tomorrow. The next one will be on the following Tuesday. So any other items of business or any other discussions? Seeing none, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.